is Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington with John Paisano, and I'm just really looking forward to talking with you about your soundtrack for Marvel's Spider-Man.
No, thank you. Yeah, it was a fun project.
You know, that's the sense that I get from all of the videos and what I've read from the team at Insomniac. They just were all so thrilled to be able to work on a Spider-Man game. I mean, is that kind of what your feeling was too?
I mean, yeah. I mean, anytime you can work on kind of an iconic, you know, character that is kind of ingrained in, you know, our culture, it's just a lot of fun to kind of be part of that world as you kind of, you know, I mean, Spider-Man's been around for a while, you know, and it's like being part of a Superman or being part of, you know, a lot of these very, very iconic comic book characters that have been part of, you know, American culture for a long time. So it was, you know, I grew up on it. So it was definitely a dream, you know, to be able to apply music to it.
Oh, I can imagine. What I've always loved about Spider-Man is that he seems to be a little more lighthearted than a lot of the superheroes. He's not as earnest as Superman and clearly not as dark as Batman. And I'm wondering how much the actor who played him, Yuri Lowenthal, influenced the music that you wrote.
It's interesting. I got started, you know, and this is, you know, I think one of the reasons why, you know, on the music side, it was an extremely kind of smooth process. And normally music's, it's tricky, you know what I mean? Whether you're doing music for film or you're doing it for video games or television or, you know, subscription-based episodic stuff, it's always tricky because I never get to write what I want to write for it. I have to accomplish what the producers and the directors and the studio and what, you know, everybody's got opinions on how they want the music to sound and the property. And video games are no different. There's a lot of, you know, I say, quote unquote, cooks in the kitchen. And it's always a tricky thing to be able to get all the information from 10, 15 different people and try to figure out how to accomplish, you know, you obviously can't please everybody, but you have to try to, you know, analyze whatever, all the information that everyone's giving you and try to figure out a way to incorporate it into the score. And that's always the trick with all of these projects. And I talk about this ad nauseum, especially these days. It's very unusual to be brought onto a project in order to go through that process from an early enough state in the project to kind of go through that. Cause it's a process to try to figure out what doesn't work before you figure out what works. And I use that saying a lot as well. And I would say within the last 20, 25 years, because of all the technology that's become part of the whether it's the video game process or the filmmaking process or, you know, all the different other mediums, it has shortened our timeline as composers to be able to kind of go through all that. And what that's done is, you know, the studio says, oh, well, we don't need to bring on the composer yet. You know, we're only in the first week of post-production, which is, in my book, already too late. So you're always fighting that as a composer. You're always trying to get on projects early. You're always trying to kind of convince the studio and the producers. I mean, directors usually are in your corner on that. They want you on early. You know, they want you to be part of it as early as possible to kind of go through that kind of discovery phase. And I got to hand it to Sony and Insomniac. They were just so smart about bringing me onto the project at such an early, early state in the game to be able to accomplish that. And to go back to your original question, and this is how I ended up down this rabbit hole, I was brought on before the actors. I was really on early in the game. I worked on Spider-Man for probably around 2 years. And I can remember just coming up with Peter Parker's theme. I remember it took a good solid month of trial and error to try to figure out kind of where we were eating, even land with that. And, you know, sometimes you have a month to write a whole film score. So I think it really was very smart, you know, of Insomniac and PlayStation. And when we had our initial meeting, I remember kind of piping up, and when they were kind of interviewing composers and going through that phase, it's something that I always am preaching for as well too. So I'm glad that they kind of agreed with it. And we ended up just getting me on really early, and it just really made the process extremely smooth. That being said, it does create a lot of work. You know, when we first started off, and this kind of goes back to your original question too, and your original concept about how Spider-Man is kind of a lighthearted character in the Marvel, I would say in the Marvel universe and in the comic book universe in general. Brian had a lot of ideas, just like the composer has a lot of ideas of what they're going to do for the score. He had a lot of ideas of what he was going to do for the game. And over time, those ideas had to kind of morph and change. But when we first started off, and I think this is what attracted me to Brian originally, was he really responded to some of the work I had done for Maze Runner and Daredevil. And he liked, you know, his idea for Spider-Man, I think, in the early stages of the game, you know, Peter Parker's aged up in this game a little bit. He's a teenager in high school. He's kind of, you know, he's already been a superhero. It's definitely not an origin story. It's kind of, you know, Spider-Man as a young adult. He's at a different time in his life. And I think Brian was keeping that in mind when he went through this, and he wanted to, you know, age him up a little bit. He wanted to make sure that, you know, he wasn't, you know, a happy-go-lucky kid anymore. And that was kind of the original idea. We first started off on kind of the journey of trying to figure out the sound for Peter Parker. We really kind of went down this a much darker road as far as the music went. And it was cool. You know, I think it was really successful, but at the same time too, because Spider-Man is such a part of, you know, people have such expectations of who he is and what he is. And there's so many successful things that have been done with the Spider-Man character over time, that at the same time, I think we were kind of getting pulled in all different directions of whether, God, how far away do you want to stray from that successful formula? And how far do you want to go to kind of make it your own character? And what's that happy median, you know? So I think we really had to kind of strike a balance, not only with the character, but also with the music as well. And so, you know, that's a perfect example of, like, you have to, it's trial and error with all of these things, not just the score, but just even with the development of the game, and all of this stuff takes time. You know, you think you have the greatest ideas in the world. I remember when I worked on Maze Runner, I was working with Wes Ball, my director, in the beginning of the first film. And we would sit there and talk, and we're both huge. Well, you know, I mean, I grew up on John Williams and Jerry Goldsmith and James Horner and John Barry. And, you know, I mean, I'm just a lot of the, you know, I mean, to me, I don't consider them the older guard, but maybe to the kids growing up today, they seem more of a kind of the classical Hollywood film scoring sound. Wes and I had these ideas of, like, oh, you know, we really want to make this like Jurassic Park. It's just got the perfect backdrop for it. And, you know, blah, blah, blah. We had all these great, fabulous ideas. And then when I got Frames and I started putting music up against it, I just realized, oh, we cannot do this at all. So, and it's the same thing with Spider-Man. It's like we had all these great, incredible concepts of what we were going to do. And, you know, they changed pretty radically, I think, over time. But some of them didn't, though, you know, and so you kind of, you know, you have to kind of go through that process and that trial and error to kind of land on your feet of where you end up.
Oh, for sure. And you mentioned the theme, and I especially wanted to talk with you about that because it was playing in my head last night before I fell asleep. It's really, really fantastic. And it captures, you know, the excitement and the power and the confidence that this older Spider-Man has. So what was your process to finally get to that the finished theme?
Well, that was the trick. I mean, the trick was I wanted to kind of age him up a little bit. I wanted him to feel, you know, more like a young man and less like a kid. You know, when I approached the Spider-Man, quote unquote, Spider-Man theme, I really considered it the Peter Parker theme. And that was kind of my approach. I didn't want to score Spider-Man. I wanted to score Peter Parker. And that's where that French horn theme kind of comes from, the main kind of motif for him. And then what I did is to transform Peter Parker into Spider-Man, we end up using more orchestration and arrangement. And there's a little thing, it's like I call it a mnemonic that we use. That's kind of a little motor that runs underneath. And you hear it throughout the whole entire score. It's this ostinato that kind of runs underneath the Spider-Man theme. And that kind of is the Spider-Man portion of the Peter Parker theme. So you have the Peter Parker theme, which is kind of stated on the French horn. And if we're talking about the main title, for instance, the Peter Parker theme is stated right up front. And then this little creeping motor comes in. And that's the Spider-Man theme. That kind of, you know, is pointing out his quickness, his agility. And it's also got a very heroic tone to it. And then kind of when you combine both those worlds together, you're big and glorious and into the big superhero kind of, you know, realm.
Thank you.
And so it was kind of taking little bits and pieces like that and having them work with each other. And I never want to have a lot of themes. If a soundtrack has 10 themes in it, sometimes it just sounds like 10 different cues. Whereas if a soundtrack has two or three really strong themes in it, then you go, oh, there's the theme. It's very identifiable. There's so many characters in this game and there's so many different storylines. And I think the fans are just going to have such a ball with it because of how much of that universe is in the game. And we had to just be very careful and conscious of like, okay, I want to make sure that the Spider-Man theme is very recognizable. And when it comes in, I want to make sure people can feel it. And even when we're doing, you know, the Shocker theme, I still have elements of the Spider-Man theme kind of interwoven with it, because when they're fighting, I always am making sure that either that Peter Parker / Spider-Man theme is always kind of prevalent in a lot of the other, you know, sub themes that are used throughout the score.
Yeah, and it works so well. And listening to the soundtrack, it's sort of a telescoped version of how you would hear the music in the game. And so it was really obvious when you would use one iteration of that theme and kind of weave it in with the music for whatever else was going on, whether he was doing the parkour around New York or dealing with a villain. And so the way that you were able to kind of morph that theme into a bunch of different ways and give it different feelings, I think is really fantastic.
Yeah, it's always kind of there reminding you, kind of hinting to you, you know, hey, don't forget about the theme. But the beauty of it too, and this is always the trick with game music that we don't have to deal with as much with film and episodic stuff, is that the implementation of the music in games is just so much more complex than it is for, it's non-linear, you know, with film, it's linear. It's, you know, you have a scene, it starts here, it ends here, you know where the character is going to go, you know, he's not going to go left, he's not going to go right, you know that, you know, it's going to end here, you know that the kiss is going to happen right at that time code. I mean, it's all there for you. It's not moving. With video game stuff, the player could choose to go left, he could go right, he could choose to not kiss the girl, he could do whatever he needs to do. So with that in mind, it creates even a little bit more of a puzzle when we're creating this music and creating these suites, so to speak. And that was the plan. You know, the plan was, I told those guys, Brian and John and all the guys over at, you know, PlayStation, Scott and company, I mean, I told that whole entire crew that we have to figure out a way to score this like a film, but we need to figure out a way to apply it like a video game. And that was, you know, because I think the goal for all of us at the end of this game was, when you're playing this game, we want it to, you know, we want the fan to go, do I want to go watch Spider-Man or do I want to go be Spider-Man? I think that's what makes games like this successful, is when you can, and I game a lot, and my favorite games are games where I can kind of just lose myself in that world and feel like I'm there, you know, and not in my living room looking at a TV playing it. And I think that, you know, we wanted to make sure that it was as a cinematic, and that's what movies do so well for us. That's why we watch them in dark theaters, and we try to lose ourselves in those films. And with all the advent of Atmos and IMAX and all this stuff, that's all that stuff's trying to capture. It's trying to put you in the movie. And we just wanted to make sure that the music was doing its best that it could in this format to be able to accomplish that. So we really had to make the music just feel seamless and make it feel, when you're playing the game, you aren't listening to the music, but you're feeling the music, you know, and it's just kind of blends in there. And those guys, that they just did such a great job. I finally got to go see, you know, some of the dub of the final game, and the way that they implemented the themes and the way that they were able to take the music and apply it so it doesn't feel like it's just looping. And, you know, I mean, it's just, it's amazing. I mean, like, you'll listen to the soundtrack, and then if you play the game or see the game, you'll feel like you're listening to, you know, 20 different pieces of music you've never heard before, because the way that they're triggering different layers. And I mean, it's just amazing how it all worked out. So I'm really, really proud of it.
Oh, that's so cool. And from what I understand, they kind of give you a lot of options for the combat with the various villains too. And so being able to pull from all those different stems and build something that it changes depending on what you're using to fight them or how long it takes. Yeah, that is a real skill.
Yeah, I mean, it really, and it's, you know, I've worked on a couple games now, and I got to say, I mean, the implementation of the music on this game is just absolutely incredible. That's always, you know, it's always the toughest part to kind of, as a composer with film, we're so used to being part of that process. But with video games, you kind of have to let it go. You know, it's too complicated for the, it's a whole art unto itself. And I don't have the sensibilities of, you know, I don't care what the programmers need. I'm thinking music first. And those guys have to kind of have, you know, they have to have a really good kind of sensibility of, you know, being musical, but at the same time, too, being extremely functional.
Yeah, I was talking earlier with Philip Shepard, who was one of the team of composers on Detroit Become Human, which also included you and Nima Fakrara. And when Philip was able to see a scene with really dramatic, really exciting music, he said, "That was brilliant. Who wrote that?" And the team said, "Well, you did." Right. Because it was set in such a different context, and it wasn't quite the way he remembered it. Were there any situations in Spider-Man?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't as tricky as Detroit, because I was the only guy on Spider-Man. But for sure, there was, like, you know, there is times where I wish I could have captured my gameplay and gotten the piece of music. When you're playing the game, you're essentially controlling the score as well. So it's a lot of fun as a composer. When you wrote the music and you're playing the game, you can kind of, you know, it's just amazing when you're running around and all the different layers and stuff that are triggering in the background. As a player, you probably would never notice, but for someone who wrote the actual piece of music, I hear, you know, I can hear every single one of those moves whenever it happens. And it's just so fun to kind of go, "Oh, wow, that actually really works well. You know, I wish I wrote it that way." And so, like, when stuff like that's happening, it's just a lot. I mean, that's just the fun part of that format. You know, it's so new. It's changing. The technology is changing every single day of how these things are being implemented. Working with those guys, they're constantly trying to problem solve and figure out what the best experience is for the player and for the user. No team does it the same way. I mean, the team that worked on Detroit, which did an amazing job, they do it a completely different way than we did it on Spider-Man. And, you know, the Gran Turismo people that I worked on a Gran Turismo game this year, they did it completely different to the Mass Effect people. I mean, it's just, everyone's got their own ways of doing it. And as a composer, you kind of get brought in and they kind of teach you their system and you kind of have to conform to it. And you kind of learn, you know, and then you share, you know, "Oh, you know, when we did Mass Effect, we did this," and you kind of share those ideas with the other teams. And it's really cool to kind of be on the forefront of that collaboration and see how it's all kind of taking shape.
Yeah, and it sounds like it's probably a useful philosophy, maybe, to not hold your music, not clutch it too tightly in your hands, because it has to serve the game. So it probably is better for your psyche if you just kind of let them.
You know, you have a couple different people that write music, you know, for this world, and you have artists. you have composers and then you have film composers. And I'm a film composer. I grew up and I saw the movie Empire of the Sun. I was 9 years old. I said, I want to be John Williams. I want to be James Newton Howard. I want to be Hans Zimmer. I wanted to be these guys who were film composers. You know, I didn't want to be Mozart. I didn't want to be Bach. I didn't want to be Shostakovich. And I didn't want to be the Beatles, and I didn't want to be, you know, I wanted to be a film composer. And so I think from a very early age and just from kind of understanding the process and working with a lot of people, I learned very quick that the last thing you can be in this process is precious about your music. Because at the end of the day, I always say, I mean, this is, might be a crude way of putting it, but I don't want to say dumbing it down, but you have to look at, you're a cabinet maker. You know, I'm making a cabinet for somebody's coming in there where they're requesting that I build something for them, and I'm building it, and I'm giving my opinion along the way. But at the end of the day, it's going to be their choice of what, you know, hardware they want, what kind of moldings they want on it, what color they want it. And I might say, oh, you know, this color might go better with everything else you have here, but they might say, you're crazy, that's the color we want. And I have to say, okay, great, let's make that color work. As you know, try telling Beethoven that, you know what I mean? That's not
going to work
well. Or you try telling the Beatles that and they're going to go, who the hell are you? You don't even play an instrument. You know what I mean? So the cool thing about film scoring is some people like working with Beethoven and some people want to work with the Beatles and some people want to work with a film composer. So it's just, it all depends and it's always different. But I kind of pride myself on being, you know, a classic Hollywood film composer. I just love the collaboration process. I love the challenge of somebody coming in my studio and saying, we don't like that. And you know, I could write the greatest piece of music in the world at 2 a.m. and go, oh my God, this is incredible. I absolutely love it. And then the director comes in the next day and he goes, I'm not into it. And you have to go, and you have to go, okay, with a smile on your face. And then they give you a bunch of advice that you think is the most craziest advice you've ever heard in your life. And then they leave your studio and you're banging your head against the, you know, the keyboard for 3 hours trying to accomplish what they want. But then all of a sudden at 2 a.m, it clicks and you go, oh my God, this is the greatest idea. And if that director didn't tell me that crazy idea, I would have never come upon this. So it does, it kind of stretches you into these, you know, amazing situations as an artist you would never come upon yourself if you were just left to your own devices. But because you're constantly getting challenged and you're constantly collaborating, as frustrating as it can be, it can also be the most rewarding part of the job.
That's so interesting. I'll bet this project in particular, because of the huge cast of characters, I mean, there are many, many, many villains. So were you able to create a unique sound for each of them? I mean, you touched on the chakra theme.
Yeah. There is, you know, we tried to do as many villain themes, I'll say, as we could. And without kind of overdoing it. But I want to say, I'm sitting here saying overdo it, but at the same time, I think we did one for every single one of them. But again, I think in the way that the guys implemented it, they really chose opportune times to use them.
We'll be right back.
but there was a lot of themes. I mean, I don't think I can count on two hands how many themes we did for all the villains and stuff. And some of them are in this portion of the game. Some of them will be kind of coming through in the DLC stuff that's going to be coming out soon. And, you know, I mean, some of them we haven't used yet and we're probably going to use them when we do a second game, you know? So we kind of covered a lot of bases, but as the kind of game progressed and went through, they realized that they had to not introduce this character yet. We had to wait. And when, you know, there were little story changes and this and that. And so, but yeah, I mean, we were constantly creating character themes throughout the whole process. And also too, there is a lot of different iterations of kind of, you know, arrangements of different themes as well too, you know, whether it was Peter Parker stuff or, you know, whether it was some of the villain themes and even some of the kind of atmospheric, you know, the city is kind of changing throughout the game and we have different, you know, I'm trying not to give away too much, but we have kind of different tonal environments that kind of had to happen as the city was going through different changes. I mean, there was a lot of thought that went into a lot of that stuff.
One of the things that I think is so interesting is that this is a completely new story. It's not, you know, really part of the canon. And what's so interesting is that you get to spend time playing as Peter Parker because he's wrestling with, you know, balancing his work life and his personal life, you know, like we all do.
Right.
It's just that his work life includes the whole city of New York.
Right.
But I think your cue behind the mask is a really great illustration of the duality that he's dealing with.
Yeah, that there's a couple Peter Parker themes that are kind of used throughout the game. And again, we were always trying to approach it from Peter Parker and not from Spider-Man, because I think more so in this game than even in a lot of the films, and he's struggling a lot with kind of who he is. Where does he kind of fit in the world as, you know, a normal person with relationships and family relationships and all that stuff. So we thought it was really important. And a couple of the other Marvel properties have done good jobs with the, has done a good job with this, where you're trying to approach these superheroes as, you know, ordinary people that do extraordinary things. You know, Peter Parker has, he's a, you know, regular person to a degree. He's figured out, you know, it's not like he's like, you know, Superman, where he's, you know, can fly into space and take on, you know, he's indestructible and all this stuff. He's still, there's still a big part of him that's a human, you know? So I think we really just wanted to make sure that the music was kind of acknowledging all those kind of conflicts that we have as normal carbon-based, you know, objects that walk around this planet that are affected by, you know, all these things that we're affected with. So I just wanted to make sure that, you know, we were kind of touching on that side without sounding too complex.
It's interesting because even the villains, I have dual characters, Mr. Negative, who seems to be kind of running the show as far as the villains are concerned. And he's got an ordinary life, too. So were you also aware? I mean, did you also like express his duality in the music that you wrote for him?
Yeah, absolutely. Like we even go back to his childhood and there was a lot of influence from that portion of his life. Absolutely. I mean, Brian is so detail oriented with all these characters. I mean, it's just amazing how much information he has on every single one of them. He would, you know, we'd be doing something and we'd be working on a theme and he would remind me of, oh, well, you know, when Mr. Negative was 2 years old and you're thinking to yourself, like, how in the hell do I am supposed to know what Mr. Negative was doing when he was 2 years old? But he would, you know, he'd give you all this information. It was incredible because, it, you know, that's as a composer, that's the type of stuff you're searching for. You know, you're always searching for those the subconscious of all of these people and characters and scenes and, you know, it's so like having that information is so good, especially when you're creating these things, because a lot of that emotion and a lot of that, you know, stuff that he's trying to get to come out has to happen through the score and through the music. And he was just fantastic when it came to, you know, making sure that we were just armed to the hilt with all the information that we needed to on all these different characters. And I think it really does kind of shine through in the game.
Thank you.
the game is so story-based. I mean, it really, he could have, before he made the game, by the time the script was done, it could have been a whole nother movie. You know, I mean, it really, they just chose to make it into a video game and not a film. But I mean, it's just, the story is fantastic. You know, I think that was the biggest part. It was from day one, this project has always been about story first and video game second. And I think, that's the great thing about video games in general these days. You're starting to see so much more of that, you know, whether it's The Last of Us or Uncharted or Spider-Man or Detroit. I mean, they're stories, they're movies, the movie industry is going to want to make movies out of every single, I mean, Spider-Man's obviously already been made, but like, I mean, you look at all some of these other things, it's just the IP in the video game industry, the movie industry is probably just, and they already are. I mean, you're already kind of seeing it happening, but it's just all this content is just fantastic.
Yeah. And then especially with a game like Detroit, where every choice that you make as a player for whichever character you play, and you scored the music for the character Marcus, that all makes a difference too. So there's all these branching storylines, which is just, you know, movies can't do anything like that, which is, I think, why games are just so cool.
Oh, yeah. I mean, David Cage, who ran that game, another person who's just so detail-oriented when it comes to story and emotion. And, you know, he really, really challenges you and makes sure, and I'm sure Nima and Philip would say the exact same thing. I mean, he just make sure that you know every single piece of emotion and every single story turn. And he really wants to make sure that you're, you know, committed to being able to kind of give your best on that, on all those fronts. And I think, I mean, he really, Detroit's a special game, you know, it's really unique. It's like playing a film.
Yeah, it definitely is. I'm wondering if there were any characters in Spider-Man, any of the villains maybe that you were just super intrigued by, or really maybe not identified with, but thought that you really enjoyed writing music for.
You know, Tombstone was a lot of fun. I mean, God, there's so many characters. I'm a little biased towards Fisk because I work on Daredevil for Marvel. So he's always a fun character. And it was also challenging to try to approach him differently than we approached him in the TV show. Or in the Netflix series. And that's interesting too. You know, I've worked on a couple of these characters in a couple of different properties. And, you know, you kind of have to wipe the slate clean when you approach someone like Fisk and try all over again with a different idea or a different approach. So that was challenging and fun. I mean, of course, all the Sinister Six stuff is a lot of fun. I mean, God, it's really hard to pick one. You know what? Honestly, if you probably ask me 4 months from now, I'll probably have a better idea. Right now, I'm just glad I got through it all.
Thank you.
And that's how I am with all my, with all the work that we do. It's, I can't appreciate an ounce of it until it's at least, you know, been out and lived in the world for like 4 months to like wipe my brain clean of it. And a matter of fact, when we did the soundtrack for Spider-Man, I gave it all to Scott over at PlayStation. I said, put this together, because it's like, and I would listen to it and approve it, but I'm too close to all this stuff. It's hard for me to, I hear every single little mistake in every single note and every single, it's just information overload for me. And it's kind of like that thinking back on the score too, you know. I mean, I'm so happy with the way that the Peter Parker theme turned out, you know. I mean, it's so, for me, it's one of those themes that it's a memorable theme. I feel like it captures his character very well, and I feel like it gives the game the tone that we were going after. So, I mean, I would say that to me sticks out as a very kind of positive experience.
Yeah. What orchestra did you use?
We used actually a couple. We used the London Session Orchestra up in, and we recorded at Air Studios in London for part of the score. We were in Nashville doing recording. We recorded some stuff up in the Bay Area. So we were all over the place for it. I mean, we had, you know, three or four recording sessions, multiple days. I mean, it was a big score, you know, a lot of music.
Yeah. And there's a great cue, Worlds Collide, that has this fabulous singer in it too. Who is she?
That's actually a singer that I've used a couple times. I used her on some of the Maze Runner stuff, but it's just someone that I've collaborated with I always like to try to have, and we also use a lot of choir in this as well too. I always try to have, you know, some sort of human element into it. I feel like it kind of grounds the score in kind of our world, you know. I didn't know how well it was going to work. And we didn't overuse it, I think. I think we kind of used just the right amount of it because it's such a strong color that I feel like you kind of have to earn it in order to apply it into the music. But it seemed to work, you know, in this as well. But in Detroit, we use a lot of it in Detroit as well.
Yeah.
In the Detroit score, but we kind of use it more in an effectual way, put a lot of reverb on it and kind of almost make it a pad and less literal choir and solo voice.
Yeah, no, it blends really, really well. And that's, I got the feeling listening to the cues in Spider-Man that it's sort of like the people in New York singing kind of for Spider-Man. Right. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it was, I mean, it's, and you know, Spider-Man also, I mean, the other tricky thing with Spider-Man too is it has such a rich history with all of its music. You know, I mean, so many great composers from, you know, the original TV series to, you know, Danny Elfman take on it to, I mean, you know, yeah, Chris Young did a Spider-Man movie, I believe. I mean, James Horner did one. I mean, and Michael Giacchino now is doing the feature. I mean, God, I mean, there's just so much great music that's been written for all of these properties. You're just kind of hoping to land somewhere in the stratosphere of what everyone else is doing. Because I'm sure there are, you know, I mean, and listen, video game fans, they know their music, you know, they are very, very educated when it comes to all this stuff. So I'm very proud of it, though. I think it's going to hold up, you know, I think it holds up well.
Yeah. And just as a complete piece, beginning to end, the soundtrack is amazing because it takes you through the arc of the story and it just, the way, you know, the tension ramps up, it's just really remarkable. And there are plans to release the soundtrack, right?
Yeah. So Mondo's putting out a vinyl, which is awesome. And then they're also going to be doing a digital release as well. And I think it's going to be released on iTunes digitally and all those other platforms, you know, Google and Play and all that stuff. So yeah, there'll be a full soundtrack for it.
Oh, that's so awesome. And how can people get in touch? How can they like follow you on social or?
Yeah, you need at John Paisano, Twitter, and then Instagram. Same as well. It's the same link for Instagram. It will, I'm trying to think of, I think it's at, I forgot how Instagram does their social media IDs. but Twitter's where you want it. I mean, Twitter I'm the most active on.
Yeah, that's awesome. Sean, I have really, really enjoyed talking with you. And again, the soundtrack is just spectacular. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.